Hey, it's Kaylee. Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to give you a quick heads up. Today, we'll be talking about HPV and cervical cancer. And as part of that story, we're going to raise issues of sexual assault and medical trauma. So if this isn't in your wheelhouse for today, hit pause and come back if and when you're ready.
Testing, 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 HPV. We are rolling.
What if the next big step towards beating cancer could start right in your mailbox? Well, the province of British Columbia is making that a reality.
My name is Christina Price. I am a single mom living a retired life. I'm enjoying my gardens and I just take it easy here. There's really not much to tell.
Christina Price lives in Port Alberni, British Columbia. She paints a peaceful picture, but recently she had a bit of a health scare.
I never felt ill, per se, but I noticed my discharge was different.
Christina noticed that she was experiencing some changes down there. It wasn't anything too alarming in her mind. Still, something felt off.
So I did talk to my doctor about it, and it was still sort of a safe change, you know? So we talked about I was turning 50 and menopause is on my horizon and my body's going through changes, and it wasn't a scheduled time to have my pap smear. So we discussed the options and decided that I would wait for a year and then would do the regular examination and just go from there.
With no real indication that anything was really wrong, the consensus they came to was to wait until Christina's next pap test. But after leaving the appointment, there was a voice in Christina's mind telling her maybe that wasn't enough.
I don't want to diss my doctor because he's wonderful and I love him. But truthfully, I did come out of the office with still concerns on what it could be because I didn't leave with an answer. So one day I was flipping through Facebook and an ad came up for BC Cancer saying that they're doing this pilot project for self-home screening. And I thought, oh, well, that's intriguing. You know, why not?
You're listening to Nice Genes, the podcast that brings cutting-edge science right to your doorstep. Brought to you by Genome British Columbia. I'm your host, Dr. Kaylee Byers, your personal courier for the latest genomic updates. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a sexually transmitted disease that, in some cases, can lead to certain cancers. For people with a cervix, we've typically relied on what we call a pap test as our go-to way to test for HPV. It involves going into your doctor's office every 3 years or so to sample some cells from your cervix. But this method of testing is shifting in really exciting ways. Earlier this year, the BC government rolled out a pilot program for at-home HPV self-screening kits. Now, instead of making a trip to the doctor, you can take an HPV test yourself in the comfort of your own home, which is exactly what Christina Price did after she saw the ad for the program on Facebook. With nothing to lose, Christina ordered a test. And a couple of weeks later, it arrived in the mail.
So when you did get the take-home test, how difficult was it to take the test yourself?
Not at all, actually. It was really easy to do. They did a really good job at illustrating exactly what you have to do. They have, you know, you hold the instrument a certain way and there's a line there so you can only insert it so far as your finger.
It might be a little tricky to visualize what these at-home tests look like, but you know those COVID tests we've all shoved up our noses? It's like that. Same, but different spot.
And completely private. I was in my bathroom. There wasn't the doctor and a nurse that comes in. Like, it wasn't awkward at all.
Once Christina took the test and shipped it off to the lab, she got on with the day-to-day and forgot about it. Until a few months later, her phone rang.
I received a call from a gynecologist saying, oh, well, we want to schedule a colposcopy. And I said, oh, well, what's a colposcopy and what is it for? And they said, oh, well, we received the test results from your examination and we wanted to have a look at your cervix and see that everything's okay, maybe take a biopsy. And then shortly after that, I did receive the letter from the cancer agency with the results.
The results showed that Christina had tested positive for HPV, but she stayed calm.
All of the staff involved, they were just all so very supportive and helpful, kind of walking me through the steps of what needed to be taken and just keeping me well informed. Like, they weren't overly technical about it. So I went for the colposcopy, which is very similar to a colonoscopy, where they examine your cervix with a camera, which I found personally to be quite interesting because you could see on the TV screen exactly what the doctor was seeing, and I just found it quite intriguing. But there were some concerning spots that he was worried about, and he took a couple biopsies of some areas, and then that was it.
After the colposcopy, Christina had to do another test called a LEAP procedure that removes abnormal cells from the cervix. Once she'd finished with the tests, the waiting game was back on. But luckily, not for very long.
I received a call like a week and a half or so after I saw him, so then, of course, my heart just drops.
Oh my God, it's bad. And he's like, well, yes and no. Yes, it was cancer that they removed, but the margins were clear, so there was no sign that anything was left behind.
How did you feel after your doctor called and was like, listen, yes, it was cancer, but it looks pretty good, after knowing that the treatment sounded like it had been successful?
Mixed emotions, obvious joy, but kind of scared at the same time because it actually was cancer. But I was just really proud of myself to have had taken that step of ordering the kit and doing the test, and as a result, cured me of cancer. So it was like heartfelt as well. Like, there's so many different emotions. I don't even know what the words are to describe them.
Thankfully, Christina's story had a happy ending. This quick, convenient, and, did I mention, free test helped her catch her cervical cancer early. If she'd waited for her next scheduled pap test a year later, we don't know what the situation would have been. Christina's experience shows us how easy and important these tests are. But to understand why these are such a game changer, we need to talk about HPV and the whole suite of misconceptions floating around about it.
Many, many, many girls get their HPV virus from boys.
Wow.
I'm Dr. Aisha Lofters. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a clinician scientist at Women's College Hospital and at the University of Toronto and a practicing family physician.
Dr. Lofters specializes in patient-centered care and does research on cervical cancer. So let's get into the science of human papillomavirus. Can you tell us a little bit about human papillomavirus? How embarrassing. Try saying that five times fast. Yeah, it's a mouthful.
So human papillomavirus, and it is a mouthful, so we typically call it HPV, is a virus that is sexually transmitted. So this can be through penile-vaginal sexual intercourse, but also through any type of sexual activity, anal, oral, even with sex toys. And it's actually a very, very common virus. So I've seen estimates that up to 80% of people at some point in their life will have HPV. Mm. So for something so common, people might wonder how come they've never heard of it or don't know much about it. And that's because most of the time, HPV is silent. So you will have no symptoms, mm-hmm. and your body will clear it on its own. In a small proportion of cases, you can end up with genital warts. That's one group of HPV viruses will give you genital warts. And then another group, what we call high-risk HPV, can increase your chances of developing cervical cancer down the road.
Yeah, and you just like talked about how common it is and these sort of different ways in which HPV can present. So how many different types of HPV are there?
Lots is the short answer. There's lots and lots of different types of HPVs, different strains. We really focus on the high-risk strains, so those that, like I said, increase your chances of developing cervical cancer or anal cancer. So people might have heard of HPV 16, HPV 18. There are some others with numbers in the 30s. You may have heard of the HPV vaccine. Those are vaccines against the higher-risk strains, and I think there's up to 9 different strains in some of the vaccines that are out there for HPV.
Oh, great. So there's many more than just those 9, but that's what we've got in terms of working with vaccines. We've got about 9 strains.
Exactly. It's about focusing on the ones that can cause harm down the road.
Have you seen a real push also like across sex, gender, like for everyone to get these vaccines?
Yeah, so I'm so glad you raised that point. And when the HPV vaccines first came out in many places, they were originally just for girls. Many, many, many girls get their HPV virus from boys.
Wow.
And some boys get HPV from girls or other boys.
Yeah.
So this idea that women's health issues are only women's problem, I think, is another myth that I would really love to debunk. Women and girls are about half of our population. So it's not just some trivial side issue. It's something for everyone to be involved with and to care about.
So just to clarify, how many different cancers can arise from HPV, or is sort of cervical cancer the big one that we think about?
Cervical cancer is definitely the big one that we think about typically. It can also cause anal cancer. It can cause like oral cancers. So again, when you think about like sexual activity, basically any body part that can be involved. Mm-hmm. But cervical cancer is probably the one that gets the most attention.
How long might that process take from first like coming into contact with HPV to developing cervical cancer or anal cancers or oral cancers?
So one of the good things about HPV is that it's actually a pretty slow process. This process of going from exposure to HPV to developing into a cancer, the period of time from exposure to the virus to developing a cancer is so long, mm-hmm. and it does tend to be a very slow process.
Okay, very cool. Well, as cool as cervical cancer can be, I guess. Cervical cancer, I think, it's quite common, right? I think it's the fourth most common cancer for people who have a cervix. But like, how preventable is it?
So one of the, I'll use the word cool because I'm a researcher. One of the really cool things about cervical cancer is that it's actually a cancer that can be eliminated because of this really tight association between HPV and cervical cancer, that if we can essentially eliminate the virus or eliminate the high-risk strains, we can eliminate this type of cancer. And the two ways that we can do that are through vaccination. Then the other way is to screen, so that if you are exposed to the virus, that we're catching it early and that we're taking the steps that we need. So there is also a push globally and in Canada to making sure that we're screening everyone, not leaving certain groups behind.
I want to talk more about screening and the different forms of testing in a second. But before we move on, are there other misconceptions about HPV at all?
There's several. HPV is directly associated with sexual activity. So I think once that comes into play, there becomes lots of issues around stigma, around promiscuity, around mm-hmm. who is and isn't susceptible. But we always try to emphasize that anyone who has participated in any type of sexual activity, even if just once, you are theoretically at risk of HPV exposure. So getting the HPV vaccine doesn't mean that now your child is going to become promiscuous or going to become sexually active the next day. Mm-hmm. And it being screened for cervical cancer, same thing, doesn't mean that you're promiscuous and had lots of partners. It's really just that we have to make sure that we're capturing everybody at risk. But I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions that I see is people thinking, oh, mm-hmm. I only have one partner, or I haven't had sex in a year, or things like that. And they feel like it's not for them. That's actually not at all the case.
As Dr. Lofters has pointed out, there are a lot of myths and misconceptions when it comes to HPV. And this plays into misconceptions about sex, a friendly reminder that sex has many shapes and many forms, and so exposure to HPV can occur in lots of different ways. Wash your toys, folks. Now that we're armed with the facts, when we come back, we're going to swab a bit deeper into how testing is giving screening a whole new meaning. You are listening to Nice Genes, a podcast all about the fascinating world of genomics and the evolving science behind it, brought to you by Genome British Columbia. I'm Dr. Kaylee Byers, your host, and we want to get more people to listen to the genomic stories that are shaping our world. So if you like Nice Genes, hit follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. If this episode gets your stamp of approval, ship it to your fave pen pals and spread the word. As we've mentioned, Pap tests have historically been what we rely on for HPV testing. People with a cervix are recommended to get a Pap test every 3 years. And even though you don't have to do it super often, it isn't something people generally look forward to. You go in, drop trowel, lie back on a table, stick your legs in some stirrups, spread them, and then the doctor inserts a swab into the vagina to grab a sample. Now, I'm no shrinking violet, but even I get a little anxious when I go in for a Pap. It's a vulnerable position. Let's talk about testing. Why do you think it's common to hear about folks dreading going in for something like a Pap test?
So the Pap test, for those both who haven't experienced it, it's a pretty unique procedure. You know, you have to get into this relatively vulnerable position. Mm-hmm. You have to take off all your clothes and, or at least, you know, from the waist down in the doctor's office. Often you're putting your feet up in these stirrups and then having a speculum inserted, and then a little broom is inserted after that and a sample is taken. So I think for many people, it's not super comfortable depending on levels of modesty and privacy. I don't know anybody who's like enthusiastic about having a Pap test.
Like, I can't wait to go back in.
Luckily, in recent years, we've been moving away from Paps, and doctors have been using HPV-specific screening. People sometimes use the two types of tests interchangeably, but they're not the same thing. So what's the difference?
So there are two ways to do the HPV screening. Now, with a Pap test, there's one way to do it, which we just talked about. You're on the exam bed in the doctor's office. With HPV screening, there's two ways to do it. One is the exact same. So a clinician, family physician, nurse practitioner collects a test essentially the exact same way. But what's really exciting with HPV is that there's another way to do it, which is self-collection, meaning the person can insert a swab into the vagina, Q-tip size, on their own, in the privacy of their own home or in the bathroom at the doctor's office. And that can be a game changer.
And are these things sort of testing different things? Is there a difference in what you're actually testing for?
It's a great question. So with the HPV test, you're testing for HPV. So you're looking to see, is the actual virus there? What happens when you have the virus, if it's going to progress, is that eventually over time, your cells start to change. They start to go from normal to starting to look what we call atypical, and then they start to become more and more abnormal. With the Pap test, that's what you're looking for, is those abnormal cells. Mm-hmm. So the main reason why the HPV test is more accurate than the Pap test is because you're catching basically step one. So step one is having the virus, and then, you know, down the road, step two is your cells start to change. So there's much more power in a negative HPV test and a negative Pap test.
And even with the HPV, you're probably like using genomics to look at the strain it is that you're looking at.
Exactly. With the HPV test, we're really looking for the actual DNA of the HPV, so the actual DNA of the virus. And specifically, we're looking for the high-risk strains of HPV, as opposed to with the Pap test, where, you know, a pathologist is looking under a microscope and seeing, are there any abnormal cells here in this sample?
Genomics hotline.
Oh, hey, genomics.
Oh, Kaylee, again. Hi. I didn't know you had our new number.
I just wanted to call and say, you done it again. Big old thank you from me and the people. Pretty fab of you to improve this whole process and revolutionize HPV screening.
Thanks, Kaylee.
Okay, well, you know, cool, cool, cool. Just call and let you know. I'm your biggest fan. Okay, love you. Bye.
I'm sure we'll be hearing from you soon.
When did these first become available? When did we have this new innovation in how we test for HPV?
You know, HPV testing has been around for a while. Even self-collection has been around for a while. I've been researching it for many years. I can't even put a number on it. Many years. I will say, as I think we all know, innovation can take a while to trickle down from a brand new innovation to becoming part of practice. HPV self-collection has been broadly implemented in Australia, in certain countries in Europe, even countries in South America. And now finally, we are seeing it in BC, and I believe in PEI. I do think Ontario is going to be following very soon. But it can take, as we all know, years and years for these innovations to trickle into practice. And I mean, we do want to make sure that there's strong evidence, they're understanding the efficacy, also acceptability, feasibility, implementation, all of those pieces. It might be brand new to the public, but certainly it's been around for a while, and lots of strong supporting research to back up this switch from Pap testing to HPV, and lots of great research to support the use of self-collection for those who want it.
We often think of important medical advancements as these big, flashy innovations. But something as simple as a self-testing HPV screening kit can make a huge difference. Not only are these tests using a more effective way of screening than a Pap test, they're also making medical care more accessible and equitable. So let's get into that. So what are some of the social barriers and inequities that certain groups of people face that make it more challenging to seek routine medical care?
There's lots. So there can be very practical issues. So things like, do you have to take 2 to 3 buses to get to your doctor's office? Backing up from that, do you have a family doctor?
I just got one after 10 years of being in Vancouver. I felt like I should have a party.
Exactly. And that's becoming more and more of a pressing issue, is that a lot of people don't have access to primary care. So there are many people who use walk-in clinics for their care, and a walk-in clinic is typically not the place where you're going to be thinking about prevention. So there's, first of all, do you have a family doctor? And then there's, what does it take to go to your family doctor? Do you have to take time off work? Do you have to take multiple buses? Do you have to either bring your child with you or find someone to take care of your child? When can you get an appointment at your family doctor? Like, if you call, is your next appointment going to be in 6 weeks? Does your family doctor allow for more than one issue at a particular visit? So for a lot of people, there's the access to the family doctor and competing priorities. Mm-hmm. So if you're struggling with a chronic illness or if it's really challenging to go to your doctor, for a lot of people, they don't focus on prevention when they go. They focus on dealing with acute issues. So that's one big barrier that we see. Then there's also issues about trust. So for a lot of people, if they've had bad experiences, again, if when they do see their doctor, they're not feeling that they're being listened to, they're not feeling that their doctor understands them or respects them, they might not rush to that doctor unless they absolutely have to. And then when it comes to cervical screening, do you even know what that is? There's lots of people who don't know what cervical screening is. There's lots of people who don't know what a cervix is. And if your doctor is not offering it up to you, do you know to say, okay, you know what? It's been X number of years. It's time for me to have my test done again.
Yeah.
So we've got lots and lots of issues in the system that we've got to address.
As we talked about earlier, going into your doctor's office for a PAP or a cervical screening test is not necessarily enjoyable. But for a lot of people, it's unfortunately a lot harder than just something you're not looking forward to. It can be traumatic.
There are some people who it's more than just uncomfortable. There are some people who it's really, really triggering and upsetting. So people who've had a history of sexual abuse or sexual trauma, other types of physical trauma. Not all doctors do a really good job of making people feel comfortable. Having a male provider for some people can just be an absolute no-go. The test can be, especially if you're quite nervous and you're tensing up, then that makes the test more uncomfortable. For people who are trans or non-binary, it can actually be a very gender disaffirming test. You know, like if you don't see yourself as a woman and then to be put in this very woman-associated position can be really uncomfortable. So there's a lot of factors, I think, with the PAP test that for a lot of people, it's uncomfortable, but for some people, it's really, really triggering and upsetting. That's where self-collection is really, really exciting because then the power is back in the hands of the patients, literally. Even if the person, you know, is really taking a trauma-informed approach and being slow and gentle, it is still someone else inserting something into your body. Whereas with self-collection, it is you. You choose what time you do it. You choose how slow you go. And the power really goes back into your hands. And I think that matters so much in a variety of spheres, but especially in healthcare, where often, you know, things are happening to you. And this is a chance for you to do it yourself. People do worry about, you know, am I getting a good enough sample? But the tests are actually designed to be like very straightforward to do. But I think it's really about giving people the power back in their hands to be able to do these tests themselves.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so exciting to me. I feel like there's so much potential here, but I'm sure that there's still some hurdles. So what are some of the challenges that these at-home HPV tests are going to face in order to like roll them out at a larger scale in a country like Canada?
So there's very practical implications. Like if you mail out a self-collection kit to everyone who's eligible, a lot of those are never going to get used just because people are busy or they still don't think that they, you know, they need this test or they lose it. So there's cost issues involved with that, right? And if you're not getting a significant proportion of them back, there is still kind of figuring out what is the best way. Like, is it best to mail it to you and then you decide if you want to use it? Do I mail you a letter and then tell you to order one if you want it? But that's an extra step. Is it best that you still come in, but I let you go into the bathroom at the doctor's office and use it? So I think really figuring out implementation is the best way. Second, not everyone wants to do these. Some people think, you know what, like, I want to know the test was done properly, so I want my clinician to do the test so that I can really trust in the results. Mm-hmm. And then a third very practical issue is if that test is positive or abnormal, now you do actually have to come in and have a speculum exam done. Mm-hmm. So for somebody who says, you know, no way am I ever going to do the speculum exam, but I'll do the self-collection, we have to be very transparent that if there's an abnormality, there will have to be future steps. And I think that's something that needs to really be made clear to people.
So I think the World Health Organization has this goal to eliminate cervical cancer by the end of the century. And Canada's committed to reach that by 2040. What are your thoughts? Are you hopeful? Do you think we're going to, you know, you think we're going to make it?
I am hopeful, and I hope that doesn't sound Pollyanna-ish, but I think the fact that we've now seen BC do this, BC is a very large and populous and diverse province. As I said, I'm very hopeful that Ontario will soon be following. I think as long as there is political will, there is public support, and there are national networks, I do think that it can happen. And I think we're getting to that place. Mm-hmm. And now that we've got the self-collection option, I think it's really for us to spread the word about these two options, to destigmatize HPV, and to push our government leaders to put support behind these screening programs.
With these self-screening tools, we're making strides towards eradicating cervical cancer, which is preventable. And as Dr. Lofters just highlighted, it's up to our leaders to step up and ensure these options are accessible and equitable for everyone. But even with all the progress we've made in medicine, there's still a really troubling history of people's health concerns being ignored or brushed off due to factors like sex, gender, or race. And sometimes you really have to become your own advocate. But that can be super empowering when you've got the right tools and info. Christina Price learned this firsthand.
I think we're conditioned to suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah.
I'm a woman and that's what happens, and stop being so sensitive about my changing body or whatever. Mm-hmm. But to have a hysterectomy, that's not a little thing. That's major. The treatments for cancer are major. So if there's a way that women or peoples with a cervix are able to take charge of that by taking this test and sort of knowing what their levels are, if they have any kind of HPV, it's almost liberating in a way, because like you're taking charge of your health. Generally speaking, it's still very taboo to talk about periods and cramping and examinations and cervix and all of that kind of private stuff. And you know, it's okay that women have sex.
Yes, amen.
It's got to put that out there to the universe. It's okay. You're not bad. It's healthy and natural. And that's why we were given these parts to begin with.
Yeah, you got them. Enjoy them.
Down straight.
You know? Our guests for today were physician and clinical scientist Dr. Aisha Lofters and Christina Price. You've been listening to Nice Genes, a podcast brought to you by Genome British Columbia. If you like this episode, go check out some of our previous ones wherever you listen from. Share us with your friends and leave us a review. You can also DM the show on social media by going to @GenomeBC. And if you're listening with kiddos or a teacher looking to spice up your lessons, we have learn-along activity sheets added to the show description of each episode. Tune in next time as we explore the seductive dance of fireflies. But don't be dazzled by their flickering lights. There's a devious firefly diva with a few tricks up her sleeve.
She's not interested in sexy time. She is interested in dinner.
A girl's gotta eat, am I right? Thank you, HP, very much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks to cervix you up some more science.